This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or to find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from Master Dogen's 300 Koan Shobogenzo, case 72. Dongshan's not Buddha, the main case. Master Dongshan said, you should understand Buddha going beyond Buddha. And a student said, what is Buddha going beyond Buddha? And Dongshan said, not Buddha. Later, Master Yunmen said, it is unnameable and unshapeable, and so it is called not. Later still, Master Fayan said, by skillful means, it is called Buddha. Naroshi's commentary. Buddha going beyond Buddha is a state of being without Buddha, which is called not Buddha. This is a state which should not be understood as existing before or after being Buddha, nor is it a state which surpasses or is inferior to Buddha. It is simply the state of having dropped off the body and the mind of Buddha. No trace of Buddha can be found. Not Buddha is a ceaseless development that cannot be named, attained, transmitted, or received. Yet do not think that there should be no resolve or that practice and enlightenment are non-existent. It's just that it cannot be named or attained. Therefore, Yunmen said, it is called not. The capping verse. Although the highest peak of the sacred mountain has been ascended, you should realize that there are still endless heavens beyond. And so here we are, really in the presence of the Buddha, in the presence of the Buddha's path, his awakening, all of his years of teaching, as we are sitting in the presence of Dada Roshi, his teacher, of all those who have come before, of all those who have been here sitting in this hall, who are not here today. This koan is a good example of how of the strain to express it, of using language which is so powerful, but is also limited. It's designed to work within certain realms, to point, to create a sense of object, to identify and discriminate. And so it strains to express that which cannot be named, attained, received, given. The struggle that we have oftentimes, I think, with the teachings is entering into that straining, as our own mind is straining to go beyond. I was reading an article recently, a website that was sort of had information about different religious traditions, and I was looking to see what it said about the Buddha, and it described his path before his enlightenment as having been fruitless. Having studied with his two teachers and being invited to share in the teaching of those communities and leaving, not doing that, and then going to study, practice with this group of ascetics. And I thought, I think there was little that the Buddha experienced that was fruitless. That he must certainly have been learning at every step along the way, that he was incorporating everything that he experienced and learned, sort of turning that in to developing his own understanding, to develop, in a sense, to be his own guide, clarifying what is right effort, what did he need to be doing, how did he need to be meditating and using his mind, what was he knew what he was seeking. But in his world, in his experience that had not been discovered before. In all of that, he was choosing to not go the well-worn path. He was finding his own way, creating his own path. If we really think about that, in a certain sense, it's the same. He even would say that to his students. He would say, look, what I can do is teach. The rest is essentially up to you. He said what he could do is present the Dharma to point as clearly as he could. He said, but the rest was up to the student, to us. And in that way, everyone who chooses to go a not the well-worn path takes on takes that on. In a sense, which takes on the burden of that. You know, I can understand the temptation. I had it many times. I just never felt like it was a viable path to just pick something, just do something, just go some way that was sort of well-defined and clearly laid out and just make that work. Other people were doing it. Just do that. It seemed like in certain moments it would be so much easier. The Buddha didn't do that. You know, imagine that as he was considering leaving, talking to his parents, talking to his friends, and his friends would be like, what are you, crazy man? You've got it made. You've got everything. You got the prize. That was how he saw it. And so in a way, he was an outlier. He was of a world, in a world, but in a certain way, he wasn't of it. He couldn't find his place. Or the place that he was given, that he had, was not his place. And I think all of us, to some degree, share in that, more or less. You know, now that Buddhism is more popular and more sort of accepted and, you know, more than it was, and I think that when we, you know, oftentimes when we set out, I mean, the Buddha seemed pretty damn clear. Like from the beginning, he talks about what he understood before, when he was still just a bodhisattva, he said, when he was before his awakening. He seemed pretty clear, even at that point. But I think a lot of us, I know in my own experience, so much was not clear. And yet at the same time, there was that sense, for me, that sense of in a kind of being an outlier, of having a life, having friends, having a world, doing what, you know, everybody else was doing, going to school, growing up. And yet there was something that just wasn't. That just wasn't. And when I think back, some things that Shoan was talking about yesterday was really bringing back some memories of that was connecting with me with this koan of going beyond. Because in a sense, in the moment when we begin to really begin to realize samsara, before we even know that word, we begin to realize something's not. But we don't really understand, right? So much is not clear. There is no path. There may be no one to talk to about it. I certainly didn't feel like I had been talking. I wouldn't have known what to say. But thank goodness that we can trust enough or be desperate enough to start heading off in some direction that's not a well-worn direction. You know, I was thinking about, you know, I went to spend a week, and I was 15. I went on a bike trip with a friend down to South Georgia to live for a week during spring break. I was in high school on this commune. It was a Christian commune. Now, I wasn't Christian. I mean, that was very clear to me, nor was I seeking to be. I wasn't looking for any kind of religion. And I was very clear in my mind that I was not interested in living in a community. So why the hell did I go pedaling several hundred miles to a very rough part of South Georgia to spend a week on this commune? What the hell was that about? I don't know. I didn't know then. I mean, I knew I made sense of it in some way. I had a week off. I wanted to go on a bike trip. I'd heard about this place. But then I applied for a period of residency when I finished high school. What the hell's going on? I wasn't accepted either. they were probably on to it. And then I took another trip to another commune in West Georgia that didn't feel right at all, so I didn't apply to go there. But, like, what was that about? There was something that I was doing, something that I was looking for, but in my conscious mind, I wasn't looking for any of those things. It's interesting how we can be functioning on these different levels simultaneously. Be saying yes and nodding no at the same time. Stepping forwards and pulling backwards at the same time. Letting go and holding on at the same time. Wanting this, not wanting this at the same time. We are a piece of work. And I, you know, can only attribute it to the strength of essentially bodhicitta before you even have a glimmer of what that is, before I certainly had a glimmer of what that was. And that's why I think desperation can be a very powerful force. Right? When just going along, the fear of going along is greater than the fear of stepping off that path and heading off in some direction that you just don't know. I mean, you know, I have no idea what the Buddha knew, what the Buddha had a sense of, what he thought. You know, we only have his teachings. But how confident he was, did he... I mean, I have the sense he knew that he was going to find liberation. He seemed to know that. How could he know that? Maybe because of all of his past lives. Maybe just because of his brilliance. Maybe that's just kind of the person he was. When we encounter the path, we encounter notions of delusion and enlightenment, of ordinary beings and awakened beings, and we have to start dealing with that. How do we hold all of that? Where do we find ourselves in all of that? We encounter the path. There's a path. We're stepping onto it. It reaches out into the distance. It's something that we do. There is movement. There is liberation. It's a path of, as Zadaroshi says, of development, evolution, unfolding. And at every moment we seem to find ourselves at a particular point. We certainly believe that we are at a certain point, which is never enough. Almost never where we think we should be. And we have to deal with that. You got to deal with that. How do we do that and not fall into being this or becoming that? Not fall into, am I succeeding or am I failing? How do we see our attachments, our habitual patterns, negative inclinations? These are words. The truth of them hurt. They're painful. How do we desperately want to free ourselves of that and not just go to war against ourselves? We got to deal with that. We have to find a way. How do we begin to steady the mind, relax the body, open the heart, and begin to experience the sambhogakaya, the body of rewards, without cherishing, without becoming enchanted with those fruits? There is great aspiration without expectation. That's a real thing. There is great faith without clutching at certainty. There is having confidence without knowing. There's wisdom, which just frees us of concepts of trying to constantly understand the world and fit it into a box. There is compassion beyond our imagination. And so when we step onto the path, we begin practicing, we begin in earnest and now more consciously to deal with this person with samsara, with all of these attributes, these qualities, these experiences that Buddhism is so has such profound understanding of, has so much language for. But now it's alive. So when we encounter the Dharma and we're reading about barriers and, you know, facing the barrier and fearlessness and we feel great aspiration and courage, you know, we're just sitting on the couch. We're still sitting on the couch, reading a book. It's resonating, and there's a reason why it's resonating. We're not making that up. But when we actually arrive over and over and over again, that's a whole nother thing. Bodhicitta is really this ongoing question that is being presented to us. How desperate am I? How important is this? What is important? The three fearlessness of the bodhisattva is that the bodhisattva isn't afraid of how difficult it's going to be. Meaning, of course, we will be afraid of how difficult it's going to be. And so we have to summon forth that fearlessness. The fearlessness of how long it's going to take. It's already taken way too long, wouldn't you say? Which means we're going to struggle with that. We're going to struggle with what we think is the right amount of time and the whole package that goes along with that way of thinking and what's actually happening. And the fearlessness of how many beings there are that we will meet in our own mind and in our world. And so Dongshan says, you should understand Buddha going beyond Buddha. Buddha going beyond. Constantly going beyond. Before we even, there's any sense of having attained or arrived, there is going beyond. Wherever you are, whatever it is. Perhaps it begins with going beyond samsara. Going beyond our acceptance of our own condition. And I remember, you know, being a kid and having friends and going to, you know, the homes of my different friends. And I had some friends who were wealthy, pretty wealthy. And I had some friends who were not wealthy at all, who were struggling. Their families were struggling. And I didn't see anybody that seemed particularly happy. And looking back, I realized I was looking at my elders, adults, right? The ones who had gone before. And looking for some inspiration, some examples. And, you know, I met many good people. I had two good parents. But in terms of inspiration of a path that they had gone that I wanted to follow, I was not finding that. And I wondered, have they found that? Is this that thing that they were seeking? Or did they just arrive here? Without seeking. And so the moment we begin to not accept samsara as an inevitable, necessary, just basic fact of life that you just have to sort of quiet down and get used to, we are beginning to go beyond. And taking up the burden of not having any idea what happens next is a real thing, if it's a real imperative. And the strength of that imperative is, I think, the weight of the burden. Because we don't know how it's going to work out. You know, I've told the story of when I was coming here and realized I wanted to be a monk and was really thinking hard about that, because it wasn't my plan. I had a plan, that wasn't my plan. And it was frightening for me on very specific levels. There are specific things that were frightening about it. And one of the things that was frightening was that I would not find my fulfillment. That desperation would never go away. That I would just live all of my days as a monk, as a suffering monk. And I thought, I have to allow for that possibility because I don't know how this is going to work out. Can I do that? Can I accept that? I wanted to make sure that I wasn't basing my decision on some made up, you know, perfect, you know, outcome. Buddha going beyond Buddha, as Dada Roshi says, is a ceaseless development. And that's why I really like that teaching that I spoke of the other day. To sustain the stream of going beyond practice as a practitioner, which means you're always going beyond grasping, knowing, concretizing, solidifying, turning into a technique, domesticating. Going beyond practice means you're committed to not giving up one sort of domesticated version of reality for another one. to sustain the stream of going beyond practice in which your original face, your self-nature, manifests as the perfect revelation of ultimate reality. Perfect accord. That practice, that effort, that life, he describes as to bow with unwavering faith. How beautiful is that? To live in a state of bowing with unwavering faith. And so we bow to our seat. We bow to each other. We bow to our food. After you use the toilet, you should bow to the toilet. You bow to the trees. Bow to the mountain. Bow in unwavering faith as a way to keep in our mind ultimate reality free, going beyond. And so we train, we practice, we take refuge, we cultivate faith, we cultivate compassion, we work it out. You come in, you're given instruction in Zazen, you're shown to your seat, okay. Pretty much the rest is up to you. There are teachings, we practice together, there's mutual support, there's much, much, much in this landscape. And all of that, in essence, is to give us confidence so that we can work it out ourselves. And we should never be confused about that. If the Buddha were here, he could not do it for you. He couldn't do it for me. And that's not a bad thing. It's not necessarily a good thing. It's just the thing. It's just the way it is. We are responsible to our own mind. We are responsible for our own karma that we are creating now. We are responsible for our own liberation. And because we have to work it out on our own, it is so, so, so important that we do that with each other. Because while we're practicing letting go, we still have faith in holding on. Because in the moments when we trust and have confidence in Buddha nature and our capacity, otherwise none of us would, I mean, if we absolutely did not have faith in our own capacity, I mean, who of us would be here? Come on. And so even in the midst of those many moments of doubt and insecurity that everyone has, we all have. I was telling somebody this week that, you know, perhaps you've noticed that during session there are certain, you have certain visitations, right? You have visiting hours, right? Certain days of the session, perhaps, when certain reliable things come to visit you. Right? Maybe it's sex, maybe it's whatever. Am I turning red? Yes, that was a visitation I used to have. One of the benefits of getting older is but one of the other visitations I would have, like clockwork, was on a certain day, and it was usually a fairly regular day, I would be visited by doubt, self-doubt, insecurity. that it sometimes became so illogical. You know, like I was afraid to go on Doksan because I was afraid Dada was going to say, look, man, you know, I've tried and I've tried and I've tried, but, you know, I just, you know, it's time. And there would be a part of my mind that would be like, oh, come on, you know, that's like not going to happen. It was like, oh, but the strength of that feeling, the conviction of that at the same time. There is so much we must go beyond. And the thing is, you know, how we work that out, we can't use old ways, right? Because old ways are just kick its ass, flush it down the toilet, annihilate it, ignore it into oblivion, you know. Those strategies have all worked in the past, but they don't work anymore. They never really did. And on the other hand, just to get on that horse and ride off, that's not going to work either. We have to work that out. What is the middle way? In your mind, in your body, in those moments. And what do you have to draw upon? What strength of faith, of courage, of resilience, of perseverance, of desperation, of ego? You're not going to be the first one to get up and just run out saying, I quit. Right? So your ego keeps you on the cushion. Good ego. For the moment, it helps. How do we go beyond when you don't see a path opening up to you? How do you go beyond when you don't actually know that it's possible? Maybe for other people, but maybe not for you. When you can't even imagine what it would be like to not be this person, have this identity, have this mind, have this beautiful monster. Can't even imagine it. I remember so many times not even being able to imagine what that would be like. Dadarishi says, it's a ceaseless development that cannot be named, cannot be attained, cannot be transmitted, cannot be received. Yet do not think that there should be no resolve. There must be great resolve. Or that practice and enlightenment are non-existent. It's just that it can't be named. It's just that it can't be attained. And so what is attainment? The Buddha way cannot be attained. I vow to attain it. Both of those are true. The only way forward is to go beyond our idea of attainment, our idea of enlightenment, our idea of I am going to, our idea of I am. The only way forward is going beyond. Therefore, Yunmen says, it is called not. What is Buddha going beyond Buddha? Dongshan said, not Buddha. To go beyond Buddha. Then Yunmen says, because you can't name it, because it has no form, because you can't take up residence here, you cannot turn this into something. You cannot make it a method. You cannot arrive here and say, I have arrived. You cannot rely on it as something that now you have and have finally attained that which is permanent. Because it's none of those things. Yunmen says, thus it is called not. And this not opens every door. It takes down every wall. It blows the roof off. This not is N-O-T, not Buddha. He is returning home, finally, after years and years of wandering. It's finally realizing you belong everywhere. Everywhere. Even when others would disagree. Now you see, that is their sense of not belonging, that they cast onto another. This path of ceaseless development that cannot be named. That's really important. The path, you know, the truth of the path is so important. You know, during Rahatsu, you know, so many things arise because of the nature of Rahatsu. And the whole question of development and path and realization and attainment and success. You know, within that mind of success and failure, when the world is based on that, everything is a failure. Every success is just a failure in waiting. It's a tyrannical world. It's a tyrannical way of life. And the only way we break free of our tyrannies is we have to try something new. That's pretty much what it comes down to. You have to try something new. You know, when I was graduating high school, I was ready to get out, let me just say that. And I remember a student who was a Zen kid who began practicing on her own and was going through high school. She was in high school. And when I would see her in Dokusan, very often she would talk about high school and how hard it was and the social scene and just all of this stuff, you know, which meant I had to go, like, back into it. And, you know, I tried everything, you know, all the skillful means I could, you know, how to practice it, how to work with it. And I remember at a certain point I said, you know what? You just have to get through it. You just have to get through it. And then you can start making other decisions. But I remember being at the end of high school and being ready to get out to leave and start making some different decisions. And so it's like, now what? Right? And so one group of friends was going to college. I didn't know if I wanted to go to college. And I wasn't going to go until I was ready to go. Because it was going to cost money, and I was very debt averse, and I just didn't want to waste it. And other groups of friends were just going out and getting jobs, you know, whatever jobs they could. And I thought, is that it? Are those my choices? And I didn't know the answer to that. But I thought, if I don't do this and I don't do that, what will happen? I'm going to have to leave home. Right, I'm not going to stay at home, but what will happen then? I will have to figure something else out. And sometimes that's just a really good strategy, is just shut the doors to those well-worn paths, and another door will open. It has to. Because Yunmen's not is not just a matter, it doesn't just open every door, it's basically conveying to us that the world is not made up of a series of doors that open and close. And some are locked and you can't get through. There are many places, there are many doors that are designed to keep people out. That's a fact. But what I'm talking about is functioning at a different level. And this level helps us when we encounter a constructed barrier that has been constructed to say no. A ceaseless development. Because It is a path that is ceaseless. It cannot be about success and failure. Success and failure is the mind of samsara. It is still within the cycle of acquisition and loss, of having and not having, of worthy and unworthy. It is ceaseless. And that means you can relax within the great urgency because your life is ticking by. And you don't know how long you have. I don't know how long I have. That's just a fact. And so within that sense of urgency, you can relax. And we have to work that out. How do you, as Master Dawei said, put the question of life and death right here, right on the tip of your nose, right? So you never lose sight of it. How do you proceed in that way with relaxation? Although the highest peak of the sacred mountain has been ascended, you should realize that there are still endless heavens beyond. Wherever you find yourself, you should realize that there is more. There is more. That's just the nature. And when we give up success and failure, that becomes our joy. To love the Dharma is to love life. It's to love living. It's to want to use this life to work it out. You know, it's to want to use your own karmic obstructions, the ones that keep coming back, to work those obstructions out, right? We each have a kind of a plate of themes in our lives, karmic themes that arise again and again. And in learning how to meet those, you know, as those beautiful monsters, not in conflict, not trying to annihilate, making your peace, being peaceful, that doesn't mean that you just learn how to be peaceful while still creating chaos. They go hand in hand, calming the chaos, letting go of the chaos, realizing the chaos, and doing that peacefully. And so when we talk about, you know, these patterns that arise again and again, they arise, but they arise differently. It's the same thread, but it's different. Because it is a ceaseless path of development. You are developing. Your path is developing. Your capacity is developing. Your way of practicing is developing, I hope. And in that way, they're not the same. And in a sense, they're showing us. They're testing us. They're giving us an opportunity to use that particular karmic stream to work out our liberation. And when we really can appreciate that, understand that, then it's a whole different landscape. These are not our enemies. Right? They are not signs of failure or mistake or insufficiency. That's the mind of success and failure talking. The way is free of that. We are fundamentally free of that, and we can live free of that, and in that, life works better. Master Dogen said at the end of Fukanza Zengi, you have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Pivotal because we have consciousness. Because we can recognize suffering. We have strong tendencies, like instincts, like in the animal world, but we can make other choices. That's how powerful consciousness is. We can imagine things, create things in our mind that don't exist, and create a hell realm. But we can also create things in our mind like aspiration, which don't exist outside of that creation, but that can bring us, help us on the path to liberation. That's how powerful consciousness is. And if we're lucky, we live long enough to realize the first noble truth. But not so long that we can put it off forever. That's the thing. You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. You are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way. This is not a luxury. It should not be a luxury. It should be something that, like the gross domestic happiness, right? That is a national priority. Wisdom and compassion. How about that? As long as we're going to imagine things. Wow. We are taking care of the essential activity of the Buddha way for ourselves and for everybody else. That's the fact. When we don't take care of it, we don't take care of it for ourselves and everybody else too. That's a fact. Who would take wasteful delight in the spark of a Flintstone? Why would we waste that opportunity to light a fire? Besides, form and substance are like the dew on the grass, this fragile human form. The fortunes of life, like a dart of lightning, this opportunity, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash. Please, honored followers of the way, long accustomed to groping for the elephant, do not doubt the true dragon. Do not doubt for a moment there is a true dragon. Devote all of your energies to the way of direct pointing at what is true, at what is real. It is not apart from here, and it is not another time. Revere the one who has gone beyond learning and is free from effort. The Buddha, our ancestors, those sitting in this hall, you yourself, have reverence for going beyond. Accord with the enlightenment of all the Buddhas, succeed to the samadhi of all the successors. It's your mind. It's been given to you. Who would take wasteful delight in this pivotal opportunity? Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. And so as we go on into the hours of our rahatsu and encounter the self, mara, patience, openings, closings, the world passing before you, in such moments, remember, those moments come and go. Practice them, use them to deepen your practice, to make yourself free. Don't be used by them. Part of an aspect of human nature is when we feel the cold of winter, when we feel the bite of hunger, when we feel the wear of tiredness, there's aliveness in that because we realize we're alive. You're coming up against it. And that's a time to draw deep from within this well. We are so much larger. Our capacity is so much greater than we know. That's what domestication does, right? It just turns on the TV loud and says, this is fun, right? This is what it is. So don't notice that the walls are closing in around you. Don't notice that there's only one choice on the menu. We should notice. We should not accept. Continue to live in such a way, and you will be such a person. The treasure store will open of itself, and you may enjoy it freely. You may enjoy it freely. And because of this fact, it's now. Enjoying it is now. We awaken wisdom by practicing with wisdom. That's what it is. That's what's happening when you practice the Dharma. We awaken compassion by being compassionate now. That's what a path is. The treasure store is open. And to trust that, have faith in that, in all of the many moments where it appears otherwise. And just understand, that is the limit of my view. That's all. That's all. When you stand outside and you look in the distance, you know that there's more beyond your vision because you've traveled there. Faith, which is the language of the mystic, is knowing that there's more before you've traveled there. And that's a great thing. That's a very powerful thing. So let's please really use this time well. We are very fortunate to be able to be here. That all of the conditions are right, that we are here. And so let us not take wasteful delight in anything. As the Dogen said, rather than be enchanted by the carved dragon, love the real dragon. And then you find that you can also love the carved dragon. That it too is in this treasure store.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.